and welcome to Booked, the Carnegie Mellon official book podcast. This is amazing. Hannah, how are you feeling?
I am feeling so freaking jazzed. This is our first episode, and because it's our first episode, we are going to spend the first bit introducing ourselves. So Sam, how are you today?
Honestly, I'm doing amazing. And you on this fine Thursday? Guys, spoiler alert, we're filming this on a Thursday.
We are. It should be out just in time for Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So exciting for this week. We also read Martyr.
Wait, did you read that too?
Kaveh Akbar?
You read that?
Yeah.
Wait, oh my god. Wait, this is going to be so fun then.
Oh, perfect.
Oh awesome.
I totally thought that you were joking around with me, and then like that you were like serious, and then I was like, oh, she's...
It's a bit. Oh, wait, guys, it's a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, love.
So, stay tuned.
Enjoy the convo.
And happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Let's do this. Let's freaking go. Hannah, would you introduce yourself a little bit? I'm dying to get to know you.
Oh, really? Since we've never met, I guess it's a good idea to like give you a little background.
Yeah, kind of get to know, first date vibes. Like, yeah.
I won't hit you with like a bunch of like, what are your life...
life goals. Do you want children, by the way?
No. Yes. What? Just kidding. So I'm Hannah. I am a literature and culture major. I'm a junior, and I have also a minor in film and media studies.
Stacked.
Yeah. And I'm stacked. How about you?
Okay.
Who are you?
Okay. Let me flex. So my name's Sam, and the crowd went wild.
Hi, Sam.
So I am a literature and culture major with additional majors in creative writing and film.
Damn.
Which is, I know, okay girl, get it. Wait, I should not have a film major. I love it though. It's my favorite thing ever, but anyways.
I am predisposed to loving film majors and minors, so.
So shout out all perfect. The film majors.
You're perfect, yeah.
We're really excited to do this podcast, by the way.
So jazzed. I mean, third year, spring semester, super excited that like the English department has the people who to facilitate this and get this ready. Huge shout out to Dylan Courtney.
Shout out.
Who is like...
a beautiful soul.
A beautiful soul, and also like the reason why we're doing this and why Sam and I are here. So what should we call Dylan, like when we shout Dylan out, like should we
our manager?
Like, our manager. Oh, yeah. Like our man. Yeah,
she's our manager.
So shout out manager Dylan Courtney.
Yeah.
Sorry, don't know who that was.
That was a really... there's a ghost in the city press office, I think actually. So anyways, Hannah is one of the most talented and culturally knowledgeable people that I know. So I think she's perfect for this. We actually learned yesterday that we met freshman year.
Yes.
In a fall Dietrich seminar that we took together.
We did. We totally forgot we were in the same class, which is so funny because Sam and I are now attached at the hip. And after she embarrassed me with all of those sweet compliments, Sam is also incredibly knowledgeable, super like, just can do everything, as you can tell. She came in wanting to do business, but we stole her away. And what an amazing, amazing, like, talented individual with such great taste, which is why we're here. Not to like brag about like our taste.
It's just gonna be a love fest.
Why don't you tell me like some of your favorite books? Actually, I would love to know. I mean, I know one of them.
Yeah.
But I want to hear.
Great question. So if you guys shout out CMUBooked_ on Instagram,
yes.
Some of the pics that were taken by the incredible Steve Macon. Shout out.
Yes.
So that had some of my favorite books. Like Kristen Hannah's The Great Alone. Incredible book. Hopefully we'll get to talk about it. Like, I'm looking at manager right now. So I love The Great Alone. I'm also, this is embarrassing, I'm a sucker for The Hunger Games. Like, any YA, I love.
Why would you ever say, like, I'm sorry about that or apologize for that?
Sunrise on the Reaping coming out soon. Hey,
wait,
I need
what
it.
What is that?
It's the new Hunger Games novel, Suzanne Collins. It's about Haymitch's games. So, basically, I love YA, any dystopia, like, Handmaid's Tale, incredible. I love Jane Eyre, like some of the classics,
yes.
You know. So much good stuff.
Yeah.
I love to read all types of stuff. Honestly, I can't narrow it down. I'm just quirky like that.
Huge.
Yeah. Love
Listen,
it.
Listen, you're just like multifaceted.
So you get it. That's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Just like this podcast. We'll okay. have so many different books to cover.
Guys, listen to the pod.
I know. I know. This episode hasn't come out yet and we're already like, stream it.
Okay. Hannah, would you be willing to tell me about your tastes in literature?
Oh, yes. I would love to, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I am a little bit, I'm annoying, so I like classics. Like, I do like the Russian classics, big fan. And just Russian literature in general, not Nabokov.
Wait, I'm going to get this reference eventually.
Yeah,
but
just like don't be sending in Pale Fire. But,
right.
Yeah, how do you feel about Lolita, huh?
Haven't read it, but I know it's questionably controversial.
Yeah, I mean, Light of My Life, Fire of My Loins,
okay.
Definitely a crazy way to start any sort of novel. But anyway, ones that I do actually like.
Go for it.
I like the spooky stuff.
Yeah.
I am a big gothic, southern gothic fan. I like Faulkner.
Okay.
But like my hits, I really love If We Were Villains. It's about like some Shakespeare students at a conservatory and a murder happens. Really great. But otherwise, I love Raymond Chandler's The Lady in the Lake. And let's see, there are just so many books out there.
I know,
there.
It's hard to think of. Wait, can I also say The Secret History is a fave? But, you know, mm-hmm. We'll talk about it.
Yes. I mean, in the span of, like, If We Were Villains versus The Secret History.
We'll get into it.
If you've read The Secret History and not If We Were Villains, it lends itself to If We Were Villains. I highly recommend reading If We Were Villains if you liked The Secret History, interested in it, and if you like Shakespeare, it is definitely up your alley. But yeah, those are my faves. Right now, I'm reading L.A. Confidential. Maybe it'll be a favorite, probably not, but yeah, that's,
get into
I guess
it.
That's me.
Yeah.
Who's the author?
Oh, who is the author of L.A. Confidential? That is James Ellroy.
One James Ellroy. Love it.
Yes. He also wrote The Black Dahlia. So he
is
like, he's like a self-proclaimed provocateur. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. I feel like people, when they make movies and they're like, I'm a provocateur, they just like throw a bunch of stuff in and then are like, it's art. And you're like, what? Okay. But what's the like substance?
What? Yeah.
So we'll see how this goes. I'm pretty excited though. I do like the movie.
Wait, I'm jazzed.
Yeah.
I'm geeked, if you will.
Yeah. All right. So now that you've heard us drone on about our incredibly fascinating lives and, you know, linguistic abilities, why don't we talk about Martyr, novel?
You read that?
Girl,
how many times can I do this bit?
The whole time. You're going to get me. Like,
you
I'm
have
going
one
to.
One more time.
Yeah.
One more left?
Yes.
Okay. That's.
Use it wisely.
Guys, you know I'm going to use it wisely.
Yes.
They already know.
So, Martyr, written by Kaveh Akbar, is something that I would not have usually picked up, but am so glad that I did. Really enjoyed reading it this week. How about you? First impressions.
Absolutely agree. It's not in my wheelhouse, even though I am a quirky girl who reads kind of everything. I definitely wouldn't have picked this up, even though cover, amazing. We'll get to it.
No, let's
wait, let's talk about it.
Let's do that. Let's judge a book by its cover.
Do-do-do. Like, do you have a connection to the book after reading it to the cover?
I do. So this is a thank you to our woman in the chair. This is a miniature Iranian warrior with a speech bubble. It says New York Times bestseller. And like the typeface is very decorative. I do think that after having read it, especially, I'm like, this is going to be like a nice one to like have up in my room.
Absolutely.
Something like that. Tommy Orange. If you've read They're There.
Which we both have.
We both have. It is, he's the author who, Kaveh Akbar said he has a very close relationship with, and his quote saying Kaveh Akbar is one of my favorite writers ever
period.
Is on the front page, period, indeed. So that is also super cool. That is actually how Sam and I found out we were in the same class and had no idea about it, because we read They're There Together.
In this specific class.
Oh, you read that? Oh, who's read that? Like, I didn't know most people who've read that anyway.
No one reads.
Yeah, actually most people don't read. Yes. I do want to say, if you have not read Martyr, we will be getting into spoilers. So totally up to your discretion whether you want to listen to us yap about it. If you have no idea what we're talking about, we'll give a short little synopsis. Back to the cover, though. I did want to reference the fact that I believe it's pronounced Linda Huang did make this cover. And she was talking about, I was like doing a little bit of research on it. And she said that it was one of like her favorite covers that she's designed. She let the typeface do all of the work. And she said that she wanted to bring in like a sense of humor. But let's get into a little synopsis.
Yeah. You want to start us off?
Yeah. I mean, so it starts us off with a main character, Cyrus. And we're following his journey being an Iranian-American man and his struggles with alcohol abuse, drug abuse, and basically he comes to the conclusion that he wants his death to mean something. Do you want to continue this?
Yeah, I mean, also just for like about him and his family, they immigrated after his mother was killed in a plane crash. Which we'll get into that more later. Spoilers for that as well. But
Loki, guys, she did not die in that plane crash.
Oh my gosh.
Stop! I'm sorry.
Spoiler alert. No, but she's right. She's right. It was all a hoax. Yeah, so he, like, the plane was shot down, and then his father, sort of in his father Ali, and his mother Roya, after Roya's death, his father moves them to what? What state is it again?
Oh, we have an answer. Where is he from?
After graduating with a literature degree from a state school in Indiana.
Indiana! Thank you, Dylan.
Shout out, manager.
The best. Yeah, so in Indiana, goes to school there, goes to state college, dates a lot, sort of explores his sexuality, and yeah, ends up getting addicted to drugs and alcohol. His dad passes away once he's in college, and yeah, it's basically about his journey post that, sort of the jobs he picks up and what he's passionate about, and his journey after that, especially with his friend Z, who he lives with, and some other people we'll talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that something that you touched on that I think is so interesting is the what Cyrus is passionate about, and what he's passionate about in a sense is just making his death mean something. Yes. Which is just like a plot that I found very, very interesting, because part of you is like, well, this book can only end one way, but yeah, it totally goes in a kind of different direction, which I thought was really interesting.
Definitely. It's also only just now that we're talking about it. Never do I think he mentions, and correct me if I'm wrong,
go for it,
making his life mean something.
No.
Only his death.
Only his death. He wants, I mean, to be a martyr.
Yes. Which, why don't we, like, give ourselves a definition of martyr just for those of us who maybe are a little confused on what exactly
we
the
mean
term
by that
means, which isn't a crazy thing to not know. So the New Oxford American Dictionary says that it is a person who is killed because of their religious or other beliefs, or a person who displays or exaggerates their discomfort or distress in order to obtain sympathy or admiration.
Right. And I feel like we're kind of living in the first section of that definition.
Yes, definitely. And like religion,
absolutely,
cultural identity, I think goes hand in hand with it. To a certain extent.
Fave character, say it on the count of three. Ready? One, two, three.
Z.
Roya.
Oh, no. You're so right. Roya is my favorite character.
Guys.
I just like Z because he just doesn't, like, disappoint me, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is sort of lame. But I do love Roya.
I love Roya.
I love Roya. Orchida. Less. I am
after the
less,
end.
I am a little less enchanted with her chapters once we know
absolutely
that she is in fact Roya. So to give a little context for that,
go for it.
Oh, me?
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you know how Sam spilled the beans about Mama not being dead in that plane. It's basically she had an affair with her lesbian lover Layla in Iran.
Alliteration.
Yes.
The alliteration. Ooh, on yes. Lesbian lover Layla. Sorry,
had no, to. It was not on purpose, but I'm always down for some alliteration.
Booked, busy,
slay. Yes, booked and busy slay. Also, fully get ready for me to be saying booked and busy, all the time. But
so yeah, she ran away with her lesbian lover.
Yes.
And did not, in fact, die on that plane.
No, unfortunately, Layla did. Right. And so,
R.I.P.
Yeah, and so when Roya sort of finds her way escaping, so to speak, to New York City, mm-hmm. she has nothing. She's really starting over this clean slate, but is it really clean? You know, she's left her son and husband with them, thinking that she was blown up in a plane in an attack by the U.S. government on a random just Iranian flight. Yeah.
I mean, they say it multiple times. Her death was, like, in a sense, meaningless. I think there's a specific quote where he says, like, 298 people. What's the difference between 299 people? If she wasn't on that plane, what would the difference be? And that was very striking to me.
Yes. Definitely some heavy-handed, like, this is what happens. These are the repercussions of war, terrorist attacks, the people who are affected. Very hard to get through at times, for sure. But yeah, I thought, so I guess we can start out sort of talking about Roya, just because
absolutely
this is where we are. But she needs to start over and escape this life in order to live to her biggest potential and no longer be a martyr of sorts, mm-hmm. of her identity within her setting, place, both emotionally and physically in Iran. And once she is freed from that, it's almost like she's died and reborn in New York City, and specifically Brooklyn, as an artist. And which later, you know, throughout the book, we see Cyrus, her son, go, not knowing that it's her, to her exhibit where she is dying of cancer, and talking to anyone who comes into the museum about death and the hard things, because she's about to die. And it's this very modern art exhibit that Cyrus, who is trying to write a book on martyrdom, goes to visit. So do you want to...
Right. I mean, that part... Talk about a plot twist, because I personally was not expecting this at all. So when you go into this book, you don't know that the artist Orchida is Cyrus's mother. You have no idea.
No.
And I even Hannah, did you have any idea that it was Cyrus's mom?
Not at all. I was like, there's no way.
I was gobsmacked.
Yeah, I was like, there is genuinely no way that she survived that flight. But then once we started getting into the chapters where her and Layla's relationship came to fruition, I was fully like, Layla. It's Layla. I thought it was her lover. I thought that Orchida was Layla for like so long until they dropped the bomb. And
exactly.
It's not.
I mean, I was just like, so attached to Roya for so long, and I loved her chapters, because initially in this book you get chapters of Roya and you get chapters of Orchida, and they don't tell you that that's the same person at different points in life until the very end. And I loved the way that Roya went about life, even though she might not be the most active character. I thought that she was just like a kind individual whose, I mean, lifeline kind of mimicked Cyrus's.
Definitely.
And both of their deaths, in a sense, I guess what Cyrus learned from her death, quote unquote, was that death should mean something. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I was so taken with Roya's chapters until we get to the very end, and I felt like my American perspective is that she was selfish in a sense, and that was kind of Cyrus's first reaction too, was why did my mother run off with her lesbian lover Layla and not tell me, until they get to the point where they have to explain, they go to Roya and Orgida's perspective and say, like, I couldn't have gone back, that part of me died, mm-hmm. and I would have died if I went back, which I think is so relevant to how Cyrus sees the world. But
definitely,
what do you think about that?
No, definitely. And, you know, the notion of second chance and right. sort of this death being a second chance, because even in my notes when I was reading through it for the first time, I had said that Cyrus is sort of preemptively a martyr with being, you know, Persian and having a dead mom. He says it so mm-hmm. much within the book that...
Even his friends are, like, uncomfortable sometimes, but he'll bring it
yeah.
up. And they'll be like, wow, we're just talking about it. But he is so open about it.
Yeah, and so it's sort of interesting how sort of death of the ego. I don't even mm-hmm. want to get that, like, crazy about it.
No, go for
but
it.
It's
go
like
there.
The death of the ego is, like, being reborn, and where hers, it was, she's attached to nothing. She no longer has the love of her life, her family, her son. She has chosen to leave all of that, and now she can have a purpose mm-hmm. in art, in a profession, and sort of, like, yeah, I mean, it's labor, but it's self-indulgent labor that ends up working. And I think that Cyrus is sort of faced with that once he finds out that...
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, he tells Z, who goes to New York with him, very straightforwardly that he's going to kill himself, and he's sort of struggling and all this stuff. And Z himself says, you're being selfish.
Right.
And so, you know, Cyrus eventually... you know, comes around, understands that he, you know, killing yourself isn't what he wants to do. But he does say at the very end of the book, he is futureless like a shattered crystal ball.
Wow.
So it's almost like they really do mirror each other mm-hmm. right up until the end of the book.
Yeah.
He now has nothing, or at least that's what he's telling us. Which I just thought I thought was interesting, and more about the, you know, what does that mean for you, like, within, like, the selfishness, the idea of, yeah, and, like, we are talking about pretty intense stuff, so, and suicide is a big part of this novel,
right?
And so I was just wondering, like, how, I don't know, your thoughts on how the two are reconciled.
Absolutely.
Selfishness, suicide, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, with the selfishness, at least my perspective on reading this book, when I was reading it, a lot of the times we get one or two chapters from Z, and from Z's perspective, I can so see where Cyrus is, I mean, he's kind of going to extremes. And he's like, I need to die or else this means nothing. And like Hannah said, he never once is like, oh, well, I want my life to mean something. That's never a thought that crosses his mind. And so part of me, from my American perspective, I'm thinking it's very, it was selfish of this character to not think of Z or other people. But then you see Roya,
yeah,
who's also doing almost exactly that same thing. Even we get another one of Roya's partners later on who says, you know, I'm mad with Roya. She didn't think of me when we were in our relationship. And
yeah,
we get to the very end where Cyrus is basically jumping headfirst into this relationship with Z. And I think that ending on the line about being futureless is, you know, implying that they're going to have that same fate.
Yeah. And yeah, I totally agree. And, like, we've only briefly talked about this before, you know, talking about everything on the podcast. We wanted to save all the juicy stuff.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh. We're just too in sync. We're just too in sync.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting novel in terms of, yeah, definitely, like, me and, like, you, if you would use these terms, like, being sort of culturally enlightened by, like, what martyrdom means.
Absolutely.
In, you know, because it's, like, American, these more Western, whatever that means.
Sure. Even, like, I think there's a line where Cyrus says, what does Western mean? Because,
yeah,
like, why are we centering it?
I know, it doesn't make... Oh, that's... Yeah,
yeah, that's totally literally a line in the book.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So, it... Yeah, so whatever that means. But I definitely think, like, American, maybe British, Anglo, if you will, sort of...
I will.
Notions, hee hee. sort of notions, and I guess Christian notions mm-hmm. of suicide and martyrdom are very individualistic.
Yes.
And so we are taught to sort of view them as selfish, you know, somebody commits suicide and somebody does something like that. And it's like, wow, you would rather, you know, stop feeling the pain that you did, that you were feeling while alive. And instead now your death is affecting all of these other people.
Right.
Like, is it worth it? And so I think it was really interesting to come into this novel and sort of see it, martyrdom and this sort of phenomena, as a collective experience.
Absolutely. And just like you're saying, I mean, that death affecting so many people, I think it's so poignant that we see how Roya's death affects all of the people around her.
Yes, her second chance also has repercussions on people around her.
Speak on it. So this author, Kaveh Akbar, is a poet, which is something that I actually didn't know until I read the back, but so I read the back after I read the entire book, which is the only way to do it, guys. And
true.
Exactly. Speak on it. Me speaking on it.
Let them speak. And shout out Portlandia. Watch Portlandia, guys. Sorry. So sorry.
Never
keep
apologize.
Talking about
never
this very
apologize.
Serious topic.
So, but you can absolutely tell throughout the book that he is a poet. I mean, there are lots of poetic lines, if not literal, like, poems throughout the book that are so lyrical.
Yeah.
I loved, there was one line, hey, I'm sorry, before we get into the rest of it, the line, I don't know if this poem is actually by Kaveh Akbar or if it's just, we're gonna get our manager on it, but the line, "Oh Muslims, I am sad tonight," that they repeat throughout the end, so beautiful. And I think that it goes so intensely to the simplicity that this book takes on martyrdom and death, because in a sense they're like, I mean, you die, and that's in a sense how Cyrus is able to take it. So so I don't want to say flippantly, but he's able to commit to the idea of just dying. Oh, so we got the answer on that quote. It's a line from the poem Death Speak. So it's not by Kaveh Akbar. It is by I'm gonna mess that up. So sorry.
It's by another Iranian poet.
By another Iranian poet.
And it was so beautiful. And I just think that it sums up so much of what this book is trying to say about death. And I don't know if you found that as well, or if there's other quotes that you feel sum this up.
Oh yeah. I got one. It's about, like, in the middle of the book, and definitely on, like, within this topic, there's one on sort of about Islam that was so eye-opening for me. And it says, in Iran, Ashura is a day of elegy where people fast and mourn the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, killed in 680 CE on his 55th birthday in the Battle of Karbala, a day of elegy. And the quote says the following, "What happened 13 centuries ago is still too much for us," Iranians say. "It is in our blood, La Grande Plante. Shekayat Bazorg. We remember, of course we remember." Oh, so good. And that's just like a quote. Yeah, like literal chills. Wow. And that's just a quote before Cyrus gives, oh my God. The next chapter is literally about Cyrus, like, fucking around at Keady University in Indiana.
Right.
But that's how he chooses to start it. It's like, it is very, like, provocative in the way that you feel, like, emotionally connected to, like, the real aspects of, like, the things. I don't know.
This book is so good.
Yeah, this book is really good. The more I talk about it, the more I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
He went off.
Let him cook. Yes. Mama, a martyr behind you. Sorry.
Did you just say mama, a martyr behind you?
I'm so sorry, guys.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Mama, a martyr behind you. That's just, like, a peek into some of the silly antics we're going to get into on this podcast, guys. Like, tune in.
Oh, my gosh.
Speaking of silliness, can we talk about the Lisa Simpson Roya chapter?
Let's talk about those little inserts.
Hey.
What are they? Why don't we explain what they are first?
Yeah, absolutely. So, basically, Cyrus has trouble sleeping. This is where it comes about, right? Yeah, Cyrus has trouble sleeping, and so in his head, to try and calm himself down and go to sleep, he'll come up with two different characters and have them speak to each other in his head, mm-hmm. Which I feel like is such a cool way to show how his mind is working and still advance the plot, because the characters, there's always at least one character that's relevant to the plot.
That's very Angels in America by Tony Kushner.
So? Angels in America.
Speak on
it. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
Oh, wow. Dylan, our woman of the freaking year.
Manager.
Is on it. Yes, our manager. This is very Angels in America code.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if I would say it's as good as that. That is my one thing that I will say. Those insert chapters in here are the one thing that I struggled with. But I do think it's very interesting and very poetic.
Right. I want to talk about it because me personally, I loved the insert chapters. I really did. Yeah. Manager is nodding along seconding. With me, seconding that.
I'll just leave then, I guess.
Yeah, honestly, just get out.
Just kidding.
So I loved the Lisa Simpson chapter. I don't know. Something stupid is that he captured Lisa Simpson's voice so poetically, and you know, the dialogue back and forth is really what drives these kind of chapters. So they're asking each other such, Lisa Simpson is asking Roya such simple questions that what a 7 or 8 year old would ask. How old is Lisa Simpson? Like 7 or 8?
Yeah.
These simple but intelligent,
like perpetually 8.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
These incredibly simple yet powerful questions that lend so heavily to having Roya talk about life in the way that we need to hear her talk. Because at this point, we don't know that Roya is also Orchida who's talking about death. So I think it's so important that we have those characters to ask her about these things and get her perspective on it. But again, you have to take all of these chapters with kind of a grain of salt because it's all happening in Cyrus's head. But I thought that was just so beautiful. I thought that was a great way to go about it.
Yeah, I guess retroactively, now that we're talking about it, maybe I should revisit the Lisa Simpson chapter, but I definitely was a little, I don't know, thrown off.
Thought it was gimmicky?
I just thought it was a little, you know, especially the one about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, whom I love, by the way, basketball player, also film star in Airplane, so good. He rocks. I hope he hasn't done anything terrible in the past 30 years.
We're going to have to
Google
it. I don't
know if he's done anything terrible in the past 30 years.
Do you think the chapters disrupted the pacing?
I do think the chapters disrupted the pacing.
Because for me, it felt like this relief throughout a lot of the heaviness.
See, but I guess I didn't see it as much as a relief, but as like, I guess I did, as a break between, just chapters. It wasn't as consistent with like past and present. Like when we're going to Roya and her life before, like it doesn't always sync up. And I guess going into the past was always like the relief for me personally.
But let me make an argument for the characters in the story and why this is necessary, because this is a time of rest. And so I think that it's literally Cyrus trying to fall asleep. And so I think that is like the point of rest that the readers need, because this book is so heavy. And so I think that's exactly what it is. Like,
I do like that.
I mean,
I like that. And I do have to say, I didn't like the Lisa Simpson Roya chapter. I didn't like the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Beethoven chapter.
I loved it.
But I did think that the Ali Shams and Rumi chapter was the best one.
That was beautiful.
I thought that one was really well done. Mm-hmm. I thought that it made, I feel like I have more of an idea. I had more of an idea at this point in the novel, hearing from his father Ali, and I do think that it is a very interesting point of sort of intersection between Cyrus's identities. Like, right, he's trying to rest. He's trying to reconcile these parts of his life that connect American culture, watching The Simpsons constantly. He says it so much. He watches The Simpsons, and then his mom, who he does not know.
Yeah.
Also, can I just say, whenever I say, I'm sorry for you, like in that tone, I'm quoting, and stick with me here, people.
We're sticking with you.
The Victorious episode where Kesha shows up.
When she says, I'm sorry that Trina is your sister.
She's she's my sister. And she goes, I'm sorry for you. And my sister and I, what is it like? It's the I scream for Kesha.
Give me a fist bump.
Yes. Yes, and they're all trying to, yes, and they're, oh my God. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
And never once have I explained it.
Hey, I got it. Speaking of talking about these parental figures in different kinds of chapters, can we talk about Ali, Cyrus's father?
Why don't you kick us off, darling?
Hey, okay, so Cyrus's father, he works 6 days a week, a crazy work schedule. He's doing physical labor. He is getting eggs from...
He works at a chicken farm.
Yeah, he works at a chicken farm. And he is somehow so little of, like, plot reference to this book, but for some reason he was so powerful to me. He dies when Cyrus is a sophomore in college, and I think that the only way Cyrus even says that it affects him is he's just like, oh, I can officially say I'm an orphan now. Like, at some point, he even says that Cyrus's father was just kind of waiting for Cyrus to go out on his own before Ali could pass away.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that they all go about death in these unconventional ways is so interesting. And, I mean, at one point they say that Roya's, you know, first, her fake death, it meant nothing. It was so meaningless because the number of people who were on that plane had no impact on anything. But Ollie's death really meant nothing.
No, I definitely think that he is a character that stands out to me, at least.
Right.
And in which his life was what was meaningful to him.
So true.
You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about deaths, martyrdom, yeah, constantly. But, like, his death, sure, we're saying, like, it didn't have any sort of profound impact. It's because his life was what he put his effort into, and what he sort of had a purpose in his own way, right? Like we talked about with Roya, where it's like his purpose was, you know, getting his son in college and out the door and on his way to making his own life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sort of interested. I guess I thought Ali was more substantial, maybe, than you did. But I'm interested to hear why.
That's totally fair. For me, I think I was so taken with Roya that Ali, he did little to connect with Cyrus. Not that he did little. He was always there. He was a dad that would do anything to protect his son. But there were many points where he would say, I just, like, don't understand Cyrus. And I think that does come down to the fact that they just have different views on life and death. And that's why they just, like, didn't connect in a substantial way, to the point that his death really didn't even hurt Cyrus as much as I would have expected. So I was just not as connected to him. But tell me, make me an argument as to why I should.
No, I really don't. Yeah. I really don't have any sort of argument. But I do think it's interesting in which I just read The Stranger by Albert Camus.
Let's
which,
go.
If you guys have read, it is definitely something. But, you know, it's French existentialism. But it essentially, like, it starts off and, like, maman had died. You know, like, that's like that's how it starts. And he goes to his mom's funeral. And he doesn't look at the body in the casket. And it's, like, a whole thing. And they bring it up against him later on in the trial.
Totally forgot that book.
Yeah, she is dense, and he also doesn't know. When he asked about her age, he says she's getting on, because he doesn't know how old his mom is.
Right,
but he does love his mom, and we have a lot of, like, I just read through those chapters again, and it's not, you know, it is a manipulation of the law against him to say that he doesn't care about his mom, because that is private.
Right,
but on the other hand, he does act totally flippant about everything and nonchalant, because we don't know what he cares about. And I do sort of feel like that with Cyrus at times. In a better way, though, I would recommend this before I recommend reading The Stranger, just in terms of, like, accessibility. And, like, this is a story you probably haven't been confronted with, or I'm sure you can find plenty of stories that mirror The Stranger's broader themes of white man existentialism in France.
The white man of it all.
It's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Just because of the way that he talks about other people.
Sure.
And there are Muslim characters in The Stranger. He kills Spoiler alert about The Stranger. We won't be doing it on here.
Absolutely not.
With Steve Mankin.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Shout out, Steve.
But, no, he kills a Muslim man. Like, a lot. Like, seven... He shoots him seven times.
You don't empathize with Marceau in The Stranger, the protagonist, in the same way that you do with Cyrus.
I mean, you're so much more able to connect with him. Not to mention, like... Cyrus doesn't kill anybody.
Right.
Marceau does. But that's all I'll say about The Stranger. But...
Wait, because honestly, I like Cyrus. I'm rooting for him the whole time, and I don't think that anybody expects you to not root for him.
Yeah.
It's just that he's hard to agree with all the time.
Yes.
Because he feels so strongly about things.
Yes.
But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, we've all got a loud friend.
Yeah, I think we're both the loud friend.
I dare say yes. Can I stop saying that? This is an episode where, like... I just love saying that.
Can we talk about the ending?
I dare say we can.
Let's do it then. Let's do it then.
Let's freaking go.
So for context, I put a pink sticky note in my book every time I like something, and I put a blue sticky note if I don't like something. If you see me on campus, ask me to pull out a book, and you will see. I have one... blue sticky note in this entire book, and it is for the ending where Z and Cyrus, like, you know, run in slow-mo to each other and are, you know, finally in love and they're perfect, which, you know, I'm oversimplifying, but it wasn't earned, but it wasn't earned. I felt I did not think that Cyrus had undergone enough change and time in order to feel like, as an audience, that he was going to be a good part of this relationship with Z. But maybe we're not supposed to think that it's going to be a good relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just ends there. So up to interpretation.
I do agree. It was rushed.
It was definitely
rushed. I think that the novel could have definitely ended with Cyrus by himself. I think it would have been probably more fitting.
Probably.
But, you know...
What can you do?
Yeah, what can you do? I also wanted to add the one part that I did like of them reuniting. I think that there are some very beautiful lines within that sequence. I was like underlining a lot. Like, whatever was merciful in the universe lived in Z. Like, I just like that sort of romantic stuff. Definitely in the spirit of Valentine's Day.
Okay! But my thing is, this book is like in a... Like, I just don't think that that necessarily matched the vibe.
Really?
Of the rest of it. I mean,
I really disagree with that.
Like, go for it.
I think I really disagree with that, because I think that the whole reason why this story is happening is because Layla and Roya fell in love.
Wow. That's a good argument.
I mean, I just like, and that's why I was like, so like, they're parallels of one another in the fact that, like, oh, I think that, you know what, and maybe this is my big opinion about the book and what I think I'm supposed to take away from it, is that, like, what matters is who you love, right? And, like, Cyrus still has the person who loves him and he loves, which Roya didn't get.
Wow.
Honestly, facts.
Yeah.
Facts.
So, like, I just think that, I do think that it's a little bit more... romantic
than it might seem to the first initial perspective.
Yeah, because
I can see that.
Because I really, this is another thing that I underlined. It's right towards the end, like second to last chapter, when they've reconciled in the park together, which I don't know what park it says they're in. Prospect Park, right?
Right.
They're in Brooklyn. Shout out Brooklyn. But it's, you know, Cyrus, it says, Cyrus felt lightheaded, his foot pulsed hard. And at the beginning of the novel.
Right. Bring us
when
back.
He is working as sort of like a dummy patient for medical students to try out on.
Love that, by
the
way.
He comments that his foot pulsed hard then, when he started getting way too introspective. And the one we get the scene where that happens, and it's where Z takes care of him and, like, wraps up his foot, and they have this wonderful time high on fentanyl, but they high have on a the good fenny. Time.
Yep.
Yes, fent. They're like licking squares.
Yes, off the chessboard. Hey, can we talk about the imagery of them licking squares of fentanyl off the chessboard?
Very.
So crazy. Yeah. Also, that entire chapter where his foot is injured, they're basically, they saw a Craigslist ad of this, basically this perv being like, I need young, attractive people to do lawn work for me so that they can get free groceries. And it was such an interesting chapter because we'd seen so little of their college days essentially before this. And I loved seeing them interact without the whole perspective that Cyrus had undergone since that point. I believe that chapter, like, Cyrus's father is still alive because he's like a freshman in college. And I just loved having that difference of perspective because I think that this book has so many people and subplots to get through that chapter actually felt like more of a break for me than a lot of like the Lisa Simpson Roya chapters.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. I thought it was silly, but I also thought it was romantic.
Very romantic.
I thought it was romantic, even though they're at, yes, a perv's house. He is a very strange
They
gentleman.
Steal money from the perv.
As they should.
Yeah, they
He's
steal.
Watching them. They, period. I mean, they did go on fentanyl, but the whole thing is that he hurts his foot by... He axes his foot while they're chopping up wood.
They don't even go to the hospital. God.
They don't even talk about the pain.
Nope.
It's because... They're probably not feeling it, but I thought, just to circle back around, I do think that his foot pulsed hard, being on page 321 at the very end is on purpose, and I think, it lends itself to a more romantic view of the novel than one might initially think you're going to get.
And even... the idea of just romanticizing one's life, even in not these like specific romantic connections, but just like romanticizing life and being a little more willing to accept the good with the bad instead of feeling like everything has to mean something. Mm-hmm. I think that is a lot of what the ending is about that I'm kind of seeing a little bit more as we get into it.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And so why don't we rate this girl? Why don't we rate this book?
I've been dying for you to ask me that question all night.
So then why don't you take us right on over to the Sam rating system and introduce us to your thoughts.
So we're going to do a little scale that I've come up with on the spot. And it's going to be from The Great Alone, which is a solid 10, to The Great Gatsby, which is a solid 1.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. So, Fitz.
Shout out. He's actually listening. I'm going to say that this definitely leans towards The Great Alone, which is being a 10. I want to give it like a solid 8.4. Is that a fair? Can we do decimals? Like, yeah. I think that's totally fair.
This is our podcast, babe.
Hey, it's not your podcast. Yeah, so basically, I really, really liked it. I feel like I'm liking it more even the more that we talk about it. Like, it's kind of that book that you have to marinate on for a little bit. And I think that you just want to give it some time. But yeah, I loved it. Yes. Hannah, tell me about your rating.
Okay, so on a scale from Pale Fire being 0 by Nabokov to, I'll say If We Were Villains This Week. I've been talking her up, which is my 10. I would put Martyr at a healthy 7.
Yeah.
I think I would put her at a healthy 7. And I like it as much as I like The Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
Which I don't remember who wrote that. I should remember. Yes, Shirley Jackson wrote The Haunting of Hill House. I do think I would put it where I do think that there's a lot of really great cultural commentary being exposed to, you know, I don't know. And I also like that there's a little, like, gay stuff.
Yeah!
Like The Haunting of Hill House. I like it. I think that it's great. That's my thing. But she isn't. We haven't gotten to like 8, 9, 10 for me quite yet.
So fair.
It's our first week.
It's our first week. We're going to get there. Yeah. No, I am very generous with my ratings, but.
No, it's good.
I liked it a lot.
Good cop, bad cop.
Exactly.
We'll switch off. We'll switch off in weeks.
And we will argue about opinions. Let us cook.
OMG. Yeah.
That was incredible.
We are booked and freaking busy. I love that it's called booked. Don't you guys love it too?
Comment below. There's nowhere to comment below. But on that note.
Yes, you can.
Can you comment below?
Yes, you can on Spotify. You can.
Oh, no.
You can comment on podcasts. That's how I know when to start the podcast I listen to.
Okay, Textbird.
Yeah.
But on that note, if you want to be a guest on the pod, then definitely follow our Instagram at CMU Booked. You can also DM us, reach out to any of us personally via email, see me on campus, like throw something at me, like genuinely, we'd be so happy to have you.
Yeah, just like tackle me in the main hall.
Honestly.
I'm so ready.
Like, just go for it.
Wait, last question, like favorite CMU building? And then we'll say our final goodbye. Like, I just want to hear.
No, absolutely.
We'll do dining locations next week.
Okay, stay
then
tuned,
then it'll
guys.
Get real.
Stay tuned.
So be waiting for that. Now you have a reason to tune back in. Wait, if you weren't enamored with us already.
Which I'm sure you were. Would it be crazy if I said Posner?
Well, yes. Why the hell would you say Posner?
Wait, I used to pull like a
That's
lot of.
Crazy.
I used
it's
to pull.
On, no, it's honest. See, the manager. Yeah, your manager. I'm say actually, bye. This is
say
Sam's
bye.
Last
this was my
episode.
First and last episode.
Wait, I'm so sorry. Why?
Okay. Exchange. First of all,
but so, it's at the bottom. You have to walk up a billion floors to get to the top.
I used to spend a lot of all nighters in the Posner classrooms, and if you steal one at the beginning of the night, it's just like such a nice study spot. Anyway, show me up. What's your favorite, Hannah?
Wait, I just have to say, I'm sorry. First of all, I don't think I've ever completed an assignment in Posner. I get way too distracted. Also, I've only ever used those rooms to watch movies. I watched Hereditary in there freshman year.
I'm putting you on it. I'm putting you on it.
Yeah, I just, I love, and this is gonna, you know, this is gonna make some people turn their heads.
Okay.
But I am a ween girly.
Hey,
I love ween through
wiener.
And through. Dude, you know, call it a wiener, call what you want, but Sorel's, no windows, can lock in there.
Yeah.
One, Prima, where I get a coffee that doesn't taste really good, but nonetheless, I crave every single day.
And I start shaking immediately.
If I don't get it, it's clipped. I'm sorry. Don't come up to me that day. But Ween, it's just good vibes.
Yeah.
And connects to every other building so I can get home faster.
That's a good argument.
Yeah,
me,
so
Posner, all I have is Dave from The Exchange. Also, I have a question. One last question before we end this. Did you read Martyr, by the way?
All right.
I had one all left. Right. I had one left.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Bye,
cuties.
For
listening. We'll see you next week.